Let's get back to more Rami Makhlouf on Chicago's Sports Radio 104.3 The Score.
You know, I think Moises has showed kind of more of the same of what he did last year, and the short stint with us. I mean, he's a gifted hitter. I think he's a natural hitter. Suggested the hitting coaches they stay away from him. I did have a meeting with the hitting coaches at one point this spring, and I called them all together, and they got a little nervous, and I said, you guys just stay away from Ballesteros. Joking, you know, but they got really the message. Yeah.
That's Craig Counsell, third and final hour of the Score Evening Show with me, Rami Makhlouf, live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Tune in tomorrow for Inside the Clubhouse with David Haugh and Bruce Levine with a special time from 12 till 2. David and Bruce will preview the upcoming season for both the Cubs and Sox with opening day coming up next Thursday. That's Inside the Clubhouse tomorrow at noon on 104.3 The Score and the Odyssey app. And joining me now on the guest hotline, one of the hosts of that show, Score Baseball Insider, Bruce Levine. Bruce, always an honor and a pleasure, sir. How are you this evening?
Rami, I imagine we should start with that cut from Council on Wednesday talking about kidding with the coaches about not messing with the Ballesteros swing. And he wasn't kidding. he was very serious because he considers Ballesteros a natural hitter. He just turned 22. And we saw, you know, a glimpse of that last year as he came from AAA twice, once early in the year where he only got one hit in about 20 at-bats, and then coming back in July, August, and really showing what he's made of, being a 300 hitter and showing signs of power. We've seen that here in spring training the last week or also, you know, just a couple days ago on Wednesday, hit two big home runs to center field, you know, flexing his muscles and showing his power. But indeed, this is a line drive hitter, a guy that's going to hit gap-to-gap doubles, so not to be messed with. But the question, Rami, is does he start the season at AAA as the full-time number one catcher, honing his skills there and getting all the at-bats, or is he a left-handed DH for the Chicago Cubs, or a full-time DH, knowing that you know, you're going to have right field for the most part played by Seiya Suzuki, but there's a lot of moving parts.
And he was informed today by Craig Counsell. I saw you tweet out that he will make the big league club and start the season up in the majors and not going down to the minors to work on his catching acumen. Which way do you think they go with him, though, Bruce? Do you think he is an everyday DH? Do you think they work him into the rotation as sort of the third catcher, maybe give him one particular pitcher who he's assigned to? I've seen that thrown out there as an idea. Where do you think they're leaning in terms of Ballesteros and his role and that he'll play on this Cubs team in 2026?
Well, he's going to hit against right-handed pitching. And, you know, as you know, and all fans know, right-handed pitching is the dominant amount of starters that begin games for most big league teams. So he's going to get a lot of at-bats there. I don't know how much catching he'll do with Amaya and Kelly there. Both of them are very good catchers who deserve time and will probably split the lion's share of the games out there, even though the lion's share means actually all of them. I think in the case of Ballesteros, they'll pick some spots for him. But, you know, my contention is this, and that is, you know, you have Conforto, you have Carlson, you have potentially McCormick. Would the Cubs be better off with him getting everyday at-bats and catching because that's his position? Is that better off to start the season? They've already answered that by telling me no, that Ballesteros is going to be with the big league team. But from a development point of view, for a 22-year-old who already can hit in the major leagues, you can go either way. And you can say, okay, well, you know, why should we stop his progression of learning how to be a catcher even though we have a need for him at the big league level. And the real answer is we're going to take the best 26. He's one of them, so therefore Council made the decision today along with the front office.
Talking with Bruce Levine, Score baseball analyst and host of Inside the Clubhouse. Catch him and David Haw tomorrow from noon until 2 right here on the Score, getting you ready for both the Cubs and Sox opening day. You brought up Seiya Suzuki in right field and expected to get the bulk of the starts out there in the corner. What do we know about Seiya Suzuki, though, with the strained PCL he suffered in the World Baseball Classic? What's the latest update? When do we expect to get another update and maybe a timeline on when Seiya will be healthy and ready to go?
Well, the progression has been good since the injury. There's no structural damage, so therefore it's just the bruise healing and him not having any miss as far as being able to run the bases. Obviously, he could start the year as a DH, not have to run a lot. So the question will have to be most likely answered tomorrow, when that's the last time you can backtrack the IL and he can 3 days. So therefore, you don't only miss about a week if he went on the IL. That would be the ideal situation. Again, if the progress continues to be made here, from what they did today with the working on him and him continuing to progress, he might make this squad and he might be available as off the bench or DHing. I think the best way to go for me would be to put him on the IL and have him available, a week after the season starts. That would be pretty good. And you have other fortification there, but you don't want to push the injury. You don't want to do it in 50-degree weather either. You would like to him to come back as well as he can be after this injury.
You mentioned Michael Conforto and Dylan Carlson out there in the mix and in the outfield, and Matt Shaw has been playing some right field and really playing all over the diamond in spring training this year, Bruce. Do you have any inclination or idea of who would start and get the bulk of the playing time out and right in say his absence, however long that might be?
Well, I think Shaw's going to get a chance. I mean, he's really hit the one thing that we haven't reported enough is he's really hit the ball well here. He's revamped his hitting again here in spring training, very short to the ball, not that significant leg kick that he used to have before, standing up straighter. So I think myself and others have underreported the hitting part of it. They're very happy with his hitting right now. This guy hit all the way through college and the lower minor leagues. So with that in mind, I think they want him out there. Certainly Carlson has been a very good outfielder and a good hitter at times during his career, not the last year or two. So, Conforto is a wild card here. Do they keep him, or is he sent to the minor leagues, or ask for his release, which he can in these minor league contracts? He can ask to be let out of his deal and move on. So can McCormick or Carlson if they choose not to keep them on the 26 men.
Has Shaw looked natural out there in right field, Bruce? Does it look like it's still a work in progress and something that he's been figuring out?
So two different things, Rami. He hasn't looked natural, but he's looked comfortable. Okay. That means he hasn't made all the plays. Council tried to educate us, the media people that are around every day, that he wasn't going to look good every day, that he wanted him to make mistakes, that he would learn from the from Quentin Berry's, the outfield coach, and more importantly, he'll learn from his mistakes. But he has looked athletic out there. He has a good arm. He made a couple of really outstanding throws, one to a cutoff man or two, one to home plate, and got a guy out at the plate. So it'll come. I mean, nobody becomes a proficient major league outfielder without time, right? Will he have enough time to be really good early on in the year? Probably not. But Council said that they're willing to live with some mistakes early out there because they believe in him as a baseball athlete. So that's how they're gauging it. They know he can play the second and third. He's played first base three times. Ballesteros has played first base a couple times. So Johnny Long from the minor leagues, their minor league player of the year, has just gotten back from an elbow injury, which he incurred when a base runner hit him early in spring training. He would be a first base candidate as well. He has options left. So, you know, it's simple to send him back to AAA and not have him sitting on the bench as the right-handed portion of a DH or the backup first baseman. So, again, there's some decisions to be made here in the next 3 or 4 days before they pack up and come home on Tuesday night. But, you know, I think they're pretty much minor situations for a team that has a really good 26-man roster.
Talking with Bruce Levine, of course, Score Baseball Insider, host of Inside the Clubhouse, along with David Haw. Special time tomorrow from noon until 2. You can follow Bruce on Twitter, at MLB Bruce Levine. And I saw you tweet out just a couple hours ago, outfielder Jared Kelenic and catcher Drew Romo cut from the spring training roster. They'll remain in camp. They also sent out right-handed pitcher Ethan Roberts and Gavin Hollowell. They were optioned to AAA. 44 remain in big league camp. How many questions are there, though, in terms of what the opening day roster will look like, Bruce, and where are those questions still remaining?
Are we talking White Sox or Cubs? Because a couple of those were White Sox.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was reading the wrong. I read the wrong one. No, I was talking about with the Cubs. My bad.
Yeah, with the Cubs. Well, certainly the decisions for that outfield's post. So is it going to be? Is Conforto going to make it? Will Shaw get the lion's share out there? Or will Carlson or McCormick be kept? That's one big area. And then the last pitching spot, you know, it's Assad and Brown looking for that spot. Is it going to be one or the other? Or will both go to AAA and be the 1-2 at AAA? Pitching every 5 days. That's a decision they have to make. Like I said, Brown has pitched extraordinarily well in spring training. He's given them a lot of hope that he's going to be the starting pitcher that they all feel he will be. But early in the season, you know, with weather, with guys sometimes not being ready to throw 5 or 6 innings, whatever occurs, you know, is Brown another middle guy to go along with Colin Ray, you know, to bridge the game to the end of the bullpen? That's, you know, is that something that's going to be common early in the year with weather situations, weather delays? You know, how many weather delays will there be where the starting pitcher goes in, throws 2 innings, you have an hour and 10, hour and 20 minute delay? You don't want to bring back the starter. So is Ray or Brown the next man up? That's how they have to look at it.
Yeah, I got ahead of myself, Bruce, because I did want to ask you the same question about the White Sox. And I mentioned Kelenic and Romo sent out. You also tweeted out yesterday that right-handed pitcher Alexander Alberto was sent back to the Rays, and their roster now sits at 39, 40 players. Bruce, where are they at, and what are the questions there as far as what the opening day roster will look like on the South side?
Well, you know, just the backup center fielders, you know, how is that going to look? There's a couple of guys that have looked okay in camp. The starting outfield, you know, is going to be Benintendi in left, and you're going to have Acuna in center, and you're going to have Hayes in right. So that's what it's going to look like for most likely opening day. There's a couple of spots open there. Like we said, Kelenic going back to AAA, he has looked good at some points there. They have a couple other candidates that have looked okay in camp, but you know that's basically what it's going to look like for you and for them. And then, what is the role of Sosa? Is he a DH? Mm-hmm. If he's not the DH, does he play second base over Mydroth, who is, you know, won that position there? So those are those moving parts. As we look at the White Sox going down the line, it's a lot of other moving parts. hopefully in June, July, August, where you see those young pitchers, Smith, and, you know, you see, you know, guys like McDougal, people like that coming through with big arms. When is Braden Montgomery going to make it to the team? Sam Antonacci, who showed so well early in spring training and then again had a couple big hits and big defensive plays for Team Italy. So that's those are some of the things that the White Sox have to sort out here in the next few days.
Bruce, what do you make of that plot of land that Ishbia bought earlier in the week that people are saying could be the future home of the Chicago White Sox? Is that getting too far out ahead of ourselves in looking at that, especially given that he can't even take control of the team until 2029? Or do you think that's a legitimate potential future site for the Chicago White Sox?
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate future plot of land. And you know, Ishbia, look, is one very rich guy. You know, him and his brother are billionaires. Mm-hmm. They don't buy land just to speculate. They usually have things in mind and good ideas about how that's going to be monetized. They're very smart guys. But as far as getting a new ballpark, I think that's number one. I don't think he's backed away from it. I don't think Jerry is backed away from the fact that they feel they need a new ballpark. Not everybody feels that way, but certainly, you know, a South Side area like at the 14th Street or at the 78, you know, those are probably good ideas for the future. Right now, you can't expect much help from the government until the Bears decide for sure they're not in Chicago. The White Sox aren't getting any help, okay? Once the Bears decide Arlington Heights or Indiana, one or the two, and they're not going to be in Chicago. So one of those two, once they do that, then funding conversation can start to take place for the Chicago White Sox. Until then, there's really no conversation.
As I mentioned a couple times, special time for Inside the Clubhouse tomorrow with yourself and David Hall. What can folks expect? What's coming up on the show tomorrow, Bruce?
Chris Getz, general manager of the White Sox. We're still efforting to have our Cub guests. We're talking about Craig Counsell, hopefully. We haven't heard quite that yet, but 12 to 2, a special edition, as you said, Rami, of Inside the Clubhouse. We'll be choosing our division winners, our MVPs, our top Chicago players of the year. Thanks so much. Have a great night, buddy.
Same to you. Sounds like a jam-packed show. I will be there again. Tune in tomorrow for Inside the Clubhouse with David Haw and Bruce Levine. Special time, noon to 2, and you just heard what they have in store for you. It's going to be a banger of a show on 104.3 The Score.
Let's get back to more Rami Makhlouf on Chicago's Sports Radio 104.3 The Score.
With you for about another half hour here on the Score Evening Show. Rami Makhlouf, Grant Leader on the other side of the glass. NCAA tourney going on, obviously, and a few games in action right now. Nothing close, nothing that you need to run to your TV for to see if your bracket's going to get busted. Absolute blowout with number two seed Purdue, 98-60 over Queens University with about 3 minutes left in that game. St. John's leads by 23. That's a 5-12 matchup there, and they lead Northern Iowa by 23 points. That's another one that I'm going to lose. That was my 5-12 upset pick of the first round. Of course, it was the 5-12 upset pick that did not happen. And then UCLA, the 7 seed, leading the 10 seed UCF 63-51. Today's action, pretty tame. Like, honestly, a bunch of blowouts as I look through the scores right now. You've had a bunch of games that were decided by 20 points or more. Yesterday, more of a nail-biter type of day in the opening round of the NCAA tournament. Although Kentucky and Santa Clara, that was a nail-biter. It looked like Kentucky was going to be the latest upset victim when Santa Clara took a three-point lead with just a couple seconds left in that game. Then a long shot tied things up at 84. Kentucky goes on to get the win in overtime, 89-84. And the one upset that we did have in today's action was Villanova falling to Utah State 86-76. That's an 8-9 matchup, so not like an earth-shattering or maybe even bracket-busting upset, but Utah State comes out on top 86-76. And a funny moment, although not everybody knew it was a funny moment in that game. We're going to bring that to you in just 1 second, but Grant, do you fill out an NCAA tourney bracket? Are you a bracket guy?
I am always a bracket guy, but I'm one of those guys that fills out a bracket watching very little to very none of college basketball when it comes to March.
I am the same way. So don't be at all ashamed or embarrassed to admit that, at least not to me. I honestly, because usually you fill out, because my full-time job is at our sister station, The Fan, in Milwaukee, but I haven't had a full-time job for the last couple years. I've been sort of a hired gun here at The Score, up at The Fan before they brought me back full-time, and a couple other places. I was just kind of, piecing it together, and what do they call it? The gig economy? I was very much a part of the gig economy until recently, and that being the case, when you're not in a building full time, you don't really get asked to enter tourney pools. So the last 2 years, I have not filled one out, and this year I did, and it is not going well. I don't know about yours, Grant, but mine is. I don't know. Can you be busted after before round one is even over? Because I'm about as close as you can get to being busted before round one is even over. I don't know where you're at.
I mean, after the first upset, I think it was High Point versus Wisconsin. I think I saw a stat 1.8 of the brackets are perfect right now. By the time we get to the second round, obviously there's going to be 0.6% of perfect brackets. But mine's pretty okay right now. I did pick USF to upset Louisville. That didn't work out. I picked Wisconsin and High Point upset them, and I'll give myself a pat on the back. I did pick VCU to beat UNC, and I did pick Texas A&M to beat St. Mary, but yeah, St. Louis beating Georgia, that one didn't work out. I did pick Akron over Texas Tech, and nice. I don't know why. I guess because Thor was out, their best player. That's why I said I thought Akron, they had a really good season this year. I thought they could do it, but yeah, there's a lot of hits and there's a lot of misses. So
I'm just going to quickly run through all the teams. I have 18 points through the first round, and there are 32 games played. I have 18 points. The first round is just about done. I think there are two more games yet to tip off tonight. I've lost Ohio State. I lost Villanova. I lost Wisconsin. I had them going to the Elite Eight. I lost BYU. I lost Georgia. I lost who else? I know there's more here. St. Mary's. I lost North Carolina. I think a lot of people probably lost North Carolina, though. It has been an absolute bloodbath in my bracket this year. I don't have not a chance to come anywhere near winning the tourney pool up at the Fan in Milwaukee, where again that is my full time job. And again, don't worry, I am one of you, born and bred in Chicago. I should maybe just retire. I should maybe not come out of retirement. This is not a Tom Brady or Michael Jordan return to the sport that I'm having right now. No, it
do you remember? Do you remember when CBS would go to the White House and they would have the presidents pick the brackets? I think you would do better than all the presidents that picked brackets before.
I don't know. Barack Obama was pretty good at right?
I think Barack Obama was the only one that I saw that was actually knew what he was talking about when it came to basketball. All the others that have passed through that have done brackets, I'm like, you guys just don't know what you're talking about.
Is anybody's bracket worse than mine? 312-644-6767. Just text. You don't have to give me a call. Is anybody's bracket worse? More of a bloodbath? Is there more red on anybody's bracket than there is mine right now? As I've gotten, again, 32 games. I have 18 points. There's two games left to play. That means I've gotten 12 games wrong. I've gotten 12 of the 30 games that have been played here in the first round wrong. And that is... that is not a good hit rate. That is not. I'm glad I didn't put any real money on this thing. I don't know about y'all, but let me know. Is anybody's bracket more busted than mine? Text in 312-644-6767. I mentioned there was a funny moment in the Villanova-Utah State game earlier, although I guess not everybody knew it was funny or that it was a joke. This was Kevin Willard, who is the head coach at Villanova. And again, they were upset. They were the 8th seed. They were upset by the 9th seed Utah State earlier today. And Kevin Willard, none too pleased during his halftime interview on CBS.
Coach, 16 pain points for Utah State. How do you keep them out?
I'm going to fire my staff because we've...
Not now.
I am, because we've given up 8 points on underneath out of bounds defense. So the only thing I'm going to do is fire them and get a new staff.
All right, go do that now. Bye, Coach. Kevin, we're losing people by the second.
No, Lauren. Well, they're still there now.
That's good.
So at least they're going to be here through the end of this, well, half.
So he's firing his whole staff. He's firing his whole staff at halftime. And you heard her like, you can't do that now, can you? He's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to go in the locker room. And they're all fired. Everybody's gone. Pink slips for everyone. Which, that was obviously a joke. Right, Grant? Like, that was clearly guy making a joke, right?
It had to be. But obviously, when you allow that many points on inbound passes, especially right now in the tournament, you're very fed up with your defensive play.
No, clearly frustrated, but also having a sense of humor about it in his halftime interview. Not everybody knew it was a joke because he kept taking questions about this in the post-game interview after they lost the game.
Mark Ziegler, San Diego Union-Tribune. You just mentioned making changes to your staff. You gave a...
It's a joke.
That's what I want to ask you about.
Bless it.
You gave an interview during the game. It went viral. You're being criticized pretty heavily online.
I don't care.
It's a joke?
Welcome to my life. It's a joke.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. Who is upset by that? Who is upset by Kevin Willard jokingly saying, I'm going to fire my whole staff at halftime? And then and preceding what you just heard there, he was asked about it again. And then when the follow-up came, he was like, guys, it's a joke. Like, who out there was actually falling for that? Is that how sensitive we've gotten now that people are, I don't know if people are upset because they thought he was serious and he was really going to go into the locker room at halftime or go into the locker room after the game and actually fire his whole staff, or if people are so sensitive, so touchy in this day and age that you can't make a joke like that in the heat of the moment and everybody just go, oh, that was a fun little moment there. Like, this is an issue now. This is a story that he joked about firing his entire staff because he wasn't happy with what he saw, not just in the first half, but then throughout the entire game. It turns out the way that game played out, like, lighten up. Everybody just take a breath and lighten up a little bit. He was making a joke. It was pretty obvious. Meanwhile, Illinois, obviously, they got through the first round. They're headed to the round of 32 now. They'll take on VCU tomorrow. And I really kind of like, I picked the one thing I think I did do well, Grant. The one thing I think I did do well, I like Illinois' path to at least the Elite Eight. I got them going to the Elite Eight and losing to Florida, not quite making it to the Final Four, but their path to at least the Elite Eight to me is pretty well paved. Again, two guys here who don't watch a ton of college basketball talking about it on Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score, but knowing the little bit that I do know about it, I like Illinois' chances of not just getting through the round of 32, but then they would have after that, let me just make sure so, I have this right, they would have the winner of Vanderbilt and, or no, I don't.
No, if they play VCU tomorrow, and if they win that game, they would have to play the winner of Texas A&M and Houston, which I don't know how much of a chance I like them against Houston. They got great shooters on their team, and they play hard defense. And anybody out of the Big 12 is going to be a tough matchup to go against. But then if they get past that, it's looking like it's either Vanderbilt, Nebraska, that winner of that game, versus Iowa and Florida. So you're potentially got a matchup of you're going to Houston in the Sweet 16 and then Florida in the Elite Eight.
I like their chances. I think they can get past Houston. They got some firepower, man. they got some firepower, and I saw it like up close and personal for the first time yesterday, taking in an Illinois game. David Mirkovic and what we saw from him yesterday, and is it Kylan Boswell for Illinois? Like they got some scorers on that team, and I think they put up 105 points in the opening round of the tournament yesterday. I think they can hang with the Houston and can match firepower with just about anybody with some of the shooters and some of the scorers that they got there down in Illinois. So I'm feeling good. I don't feel good about much in my bracket, but I'm feeling pretty good about my prediction that Illinois makes the Elite Eight. That might be the one Big Ten team that I got right, because Ohio State got me, Wisconsin got me. Who else? Who else in the Big Ten
has lost already? You still got Purdue in the bracket. You still got Nebraska. Nebraska looks really good as well. So those are two teams that are in the Big Ten that could really, you know, give a chance to it. But at the end of the day,
Michigan moved on. Yeah, I guess.
And Michigan too. But at the end of the day, I know this might sound a hot take. I know they really struggled against a number 16 Siena. I still think Duke is probably the best team out of anybody in this bracket. And I know Michigan still exists. I know Florida still exists, but like Duke is, you know, it's Duke. So
that, yeah, they are.
And they got two top five picks in their rotation right now. So
I had
and
Purdue,
a bunch of lottery guys.
I have Purdue going to the Elite Eight. I didn't even realize like how much stock I put. I have Michigan State going to the Elite Eight. I didn't realize how much stock I put in the Big Ten till I just started reading or reviewing Michigan. I have in the Elite Eight, like half the Elite Eight I have as Big Ten teams. So don't let me down, Big Ten. You could get me back into this thing. We'll hit a quick break, wrap up the Score Evening Show right after this. Any score updates, we'll get those to you and wrap things up on Score Evenings on a Friday night right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score. That highlight courtesy of Fox as Venezuela brings home the title of World Baseball Classic Champions. It is Rami Makhlouf with you for just a few more minutes. And that was the capper of a fantastic game, a fantastic tournament in the World Baseball Classic, and a tournament that really has arrived. And I thought that was the case as I was watching it. Like just the feeling, the vibe around it was that there was more interest and more people into that tournament than ever before, and the numbers back it up now that we've gotten the ratings of the World Baseball Classic, and according to Fox Sports, a record 10.784 million people across Fox and Fox Deportes tuned in to that final that you just heard right there, with peak viewership clocking in at 12.148 million at around 10:30 p.m. Eastern time as Venezuela's win drew more than twice, just to give some context, twice the number of viewers than the 2023 final between Japan and the U.S. 4.48 watched that one, while almost 10.8 million watched that final a few nights ago down there in Miami. And man, I said it's arrived, and more people were into it than ever before. And I'm one of those people. Like I was not that. I love baseball. Baseball is my first love, and I love it's my favorite sport. Love me some baseball, but I just, and this rubs some people the wrong way when I say it, I love America. Okay, I'm just gonna put that out there. I'm just sports patriotism through sports doesn't do a whole lot for me. Like you got to give me the sports. I don't watch a lot of the Olympics because those just aren't sports that I'm interested in. And even the sports that I am interested in, like you got to give me the high level stuff. You know what? You got to give me the good stuff. I need high level competitive baseball. And I don't know that this tournament really delivered that before this year's tournament and the caliber of talent that went for most. I mean, Team USA, they've had trouble drawing the biggest of names. You had Mike Trout on that team a few years ago, and he struck out against Shohei Ohtani to end a great game in that tournament. But this year, the Team USA roster was absolutely stacked and star-studded, and teams all around the world and teams from all over the world had some stacked rosters. And that game between Team USA and the Dominican, there was over 50 guys who have had all-star nods on that field or on those rosters. So I think that goes a long way in drawing some interest to the game. By the way, the tournament averaged 1.294 million viewers per game across several Fox channels. That was a 156% increase over the 2023 edition, which averaged just over 500,000. So I'm not the only one who wasn't really in on the World Baseball Classic until this year. Of course, you have something like that, and people are like, wow, that was great. How do we make it even better? And there has been the idea thrown out there of this thing being a mid-season tournament, and that alleviates some, not all, but some of like the load management of managing a World Baseball Classic team, because you do this thing in March, and teams are real paranoid about, especially with pitchers, my guy hasn't had the proper ramp up to be pitching this amount and this high leverage of innings as we see in the World Baseball Classic. And Rob Manfred said that is something that they're considering. They have to get the whole world in on it, though, because not just Major League Baseball would have to stop their season. Every baseball league around the world, in Asia, Australia, South America, Central America, they'd all have to stop their baseball leagues midsummer. So a lot of hoops to jump through there. I would love it if they could do it. That's going to do it for me on Score Evenings. My thanks to Evan Altman of Cubs Insider for joining me, as well as Bruce Levine. Thanks to all of you for listening, for contributing to the show. Your texts, your calls, your tweets make it that much better. And, of course, thanks to Grant Leader on the other side of the glass for helping me put this thing together tonight. Rami Makhlouf saying thanks for listening to the Score Evening Show right here on Chicago Sports Radio. 104.3 The Score.